Planning Committee. Have we got any apologies for absence?
Chair, yes, we do. We have an apology from Councillor Hardy, Councillor Munro and Councillor Parry.
Okay, the order of business.
Oh. Apologies from Councillor Alexander.
All right, okay, thanks.
The order of business is as printed in the agenda. Draw members' attention to the two late set of conditions which were circulated separate from the agenda papers.
Thanks a lot. Any declarations of interest? Can I remind those that you can declare an interest on the specific item as well? Okay, that then takes us on to the minutes of the previous meeting, which were held on the 19th of June, on pages 5 to 18, for your approval. Are these minutes approved? Okay, thank you very much. Right, it brings us on to public reports, which is 5.1, pages 19 and 20, which is the supplementary guidance, Green Networks. Peter.
Thank you, Chair. The purpose of this report is to update the Committee on the adoption of the Midlothian Green Network Supplementary Guidance. At its meeting of the 7th of November 2017, the Council adopted the Midlothian Local Development Plan, which included a commitment to prepare supplementary guidance and planning guidance on a number of topics, including a green network. At its meeting of the 9th of January 2018, the Committee approved a draft Green Network Supplementary Guidance for consultation. And then at its meeting of the 19th of June 2018, the Committee adopted the draft guidance and instructed that a number of administrative tasks are undertaken, including notification of Scottish ministers. The report sets out the actions undertaken and advises that the Scottish ministers have requested the insertion of an additional sentence into the guidance. This has been done, and the adopted guidance is now available on the Council's website. The recommendation is for the Committee to note the contents of the report.
Good news story all round. It's been out to public consultation, come back, and Scottish ministers, with the small amendment, have said it's good to go. So can we note the report, and that will then become part of the supplementary guidelines with regard to the current Midlothian local plan. Is that agreed? Thanks very much indeed. It takes us on to the next supplementary guidance, which is resource extraction. Again, Peter.
Thank you, Chair. This is a report seeking the Committee's agreement to undertake a formal consultation on its proposed resource extraction supplementary guidance. Again, at its meeting of the 7th of November 2017, the Council adopted the Midlothian Local Development Plan, which included a commitment to prepare supplementary guidance and planning guidance under a number of topic areas, including resource extraction. The draft supplementary guidance sets out site operating standards in respect of a number of key environmental factors, such as noise, dust and vibration. It seeks to set out an approach to better ensure the restoration of resource extraction sites and sets out measures to increase community involvement and oversight of mineral operations. When the Midlothian Local Development Plan was prepared, it was also envisaged that the guidance would provide more up-to-date detail on onshore oil and gas. However, the Scottish Government has subsequently stated that it will not support the development of unconventional gas extraction activities, including hydraulic fracturing and coal bed methane extraction. This position was endorsed by the Scottish Parliament at its meeting in October 2017. Accordingly, the supplementary guidance will provide no further guidance on this topic, but this aspect of the guidance could be revisited if national policy changes. The draft guidance will be made publicly available on the Council's website for a period of no less than 28 days. Community councils and other interested parties will be notified of the draft guidance and invited to make comment. The recommendation is that committee approve the draft guidance for consultation and that it consider a further report following the proposed consultation.
Thanks very much, Peter. Again, the same kind of process as we did when we came to the Green Network, and that is we agree a draft report here, it goes out to public consultation, all the comments are taken into account and the report will come back for the committee. Is there any specific questions anybody has on this, or are we quite happy to put it out to a public consultation in the way that the draft is in front of us? Councillor Hackett.
Thank you, Chair. Just as a relatively new council, just out of interest, is the current draft a big step away from how we currently, or what our current policy is as a council?
No, Chair, it's just a continuing sort of evolution of our understanding of these sites and how they're managed and how the environmental impacts are mitigated. We are tightening up on the restoration component, I guess, is the biggest issue following the sort of the changes following the Scottish coal challenges, which meant that there was problems across Scotland in terms of restoring sites. So every council across Scotland, including ourselves, are being a lot more vigilant with regard to making sure sites are restored after the materials are extracted.
It does have to change again, Councillor Hackett, because as Peter alluded to, the Scottish Parliament have already passed through their Parliament about the extraction of the gases and the way that that's extracted. So we've got to take account of that. So it's a changing map across Midlothian as we go forward. And it might change. It might change even more when it, actually the final report comes back here anyway, because others may have, through consultation, some other things to add or indeed take away from the report. So is it agreed that we go out to public consultation on this? Okay, right, thanks very much indeed. That then brings us on to the major developments, which of course is the normal circular that goes round members just to let them know what's currently happening or may happen or about to happen, and that's not come yet up in front of the Planning Committee. So again, as per normal, any member has any questions on any specific site, if you just indicate, and I'm sure Peter will be able to answer your questions. So, open it up to members of the committee. Do you have anything? No. Okay. Right, there you are. You're getting off today, Peter. Okay, that then brings us on to item 5.4, which is on page 69 and 70. And it covers appeals and local review body decisions. Peter, just normal?
Yeah, just for noting, Chair, that the LRB decisions that have previously been made.
Okay, that then takes us on to 5.5, which is on page 71 to 74, which is the proposed erection of community facilities. I better remind myself and others that it's the pre-application consultation papers. So again, Peter, just invite you to comment on it.
Thank you, Chair. This is a report regarding a pre-application consultation for the erection of a community facility incorporating primary school, early years provision, library and leisure facilities at land at Danderhall Primary School and Danderhall Recreation Ground, Edmonston Road, Danderhall. The purpose of this report is to afford members the opportunity to make comment on the proposals at these very early stages of the planning process, in line with the guidance reported to committee at its meeting in June 2017. The applicants have engaged in a public consultation exercise, which included holding two public drop-in sessions. The report outlines a provisional planning consideration with regard to the development plan and material consideration. The site comprises the site of the existing Danderhall Primary School and grounds and part of the Danderhall Recreational Ground. The site falls within the built-up area of Danderhall, where there is a presumption in favour of development unless it is unlikely to detract materially from the existing character or amenity of the area. The Danderhall Recreational Ground is an area of open space which is covered by a planning policy which seeks to protect and enhance such space. The permanent loss of this area of open space is contrary to policy, but can potentially be mitigated by the provision of an alternative replacement facility or the enhancement of other local facilities. The local plan sets out a requirement for enhanced education provision in Danderhall. It is worth noting that this consideration is based on the indicative information available at present. A detailed assessment of any proposal will be made if a planning application is forthcoming. The applicant could submit a planning application once the public consultation has been concluded. It is recommended that the committee notes the provisional planning position set out in the report, that any comments made by members will form part of the minutes of the committee meeting, and that the expression of a provisional view does not fetter the committee in its consideration of any subsequent formal planning application.
Very much indeed. This is the Councillor Curran.
Thanks, Chair. Just to acknowledge the good work that's been undertaken in regard to the consultations so far, particularly one in August that recently took place. I've received actually quite a significant number of feedback, all positive feedback. So just like to acknowledge that. And in terms of the open space, it's going to be lost. Item 3.5 in the paper. Acknowledging that, and it is a fair bit of open space, but also acknowledging the fact that it is required to, if we're going to deliver a state-of-the-art primary school. I think that's acknowledged locally as well, but it's good to see that we're going to try and mitigate that, the impact of that loss.
Councillor Curran, is there any other member of anything they want to say? Nope. Wait the application coming in. Right, thanks again, Peter. That then takes us on to item 5.6, which is on pages 75 to 78, and it's again a pre-application report regarding residential development at Mayfield. Peter.
Thank you, Chair. This report is regarding a pre-application consultation for the residential development of land east of Conifer Road, Mayfield. The site was the grounds of the former Bryans Primary School and is allocated for an indicative 65 residential units in the local plan. The consultation is based on a development of 72 dwelling houses. The purpose of this report is to afford members the opportunity to make comment on the proposals at this very early stage of the planning process, in line with the guidance which was reported to committee at its meeting in June 2017. The applicants have engaged in a public consultation exercise, which included holding two public drop-in sessions. The report outlines a provisional planning consideration with regard to the development plan and material considerations. The Midlothian Local Development Plan identifies the site as being allocated for housing as site HS48, where there is a presumption in favour of appropriate residential development. However, it is worth noting that this consideration is based on the indicative information available at present. A detailed assessment of the details will be considered once a plan application is submitted. It is recommended that the committee notes the provisional planning position set out in the report, that any comments made by members will form part of the minute on the committee, and that the expression of a provisional view does not fetter the committee in its consideration of any subsequent formal plan application.
Thanks, Peter. Open to members of the committee. Any comments you want to make at this stage? Councillor Smart.
Thank you, Chair. It's just a question. I note that in the local development plan it's allocated for 65 dwellings. I was just wondering, is that like an average amount of bedrooms, like two or three bedroom houses? Because I note that when I was at the consultation last week, some of the houses are intended to be bungalows and like one beds. Is that right?
Chair, yeah. The in terms of preparing the local plan, we look at the size of sites and anticipated densities, and then you propose an indicative number, usually in liaison with the landowner. Excuse me. Usually in liaison with the landowner or a builder who's proposing a certain development scale. But at that point, the numbers are just indicative so that you can give communities an idea of the scale of development. It's not often you get right into the detail of schemes that the precise numbers come forward. But in terms of speaking to the applicants, you're looking at most probably two-storey dwelling houses coming forward rather than bungalows.
Thank you, Chair. Just similar question, so thank you for asking that. Is there a kind of routine process in which developers or house builders, or is there something within the planning system where people have to look at crime prevention design as part of the layout? Because I'm just very conscious that there's been ongoing problems up there in the community with people dipping in and out of the woods and the police finding it difficult to kind of follow particularly young people. And I'm wondering if there is an obligation on developers to consult with crime prevention architects to kind of look at that sort of thing. And if not, I'd encourage this developer to seek that service.
Chair, yeah, in terms of assessing developments, even for plan application assessments, we consider what's called secure by design, which is looking at making housing estates, new layouts, as safe as possible where appropriate. So you're looking to promote passive surveillance and open spaces so people can see I know the police do have a liaison officer that we liaison with regard to Secure by Design, so we deal with them in terms of looking at projects. So it is very much a consideration in the planning process. Most developers do look at that as part of their initial layouts and designs as well, so it's not just left to the latter stages. So it is a consideration.
Yes, likewise, I attended the presentation for this. The hot point here, I think, is the fact that the only road access will be through Conifer Road, which may present parking issues and cars passing each other issues. There might have been an access to David Scott Avenue. You can see this all laid out on page 78. But my understanding is that little box at the bottom left corner that's in the bold actually belongs to Melville Housing Association. I just wondered if you could comment on the access issues and what the right of passage across that land is going to be.
Chair, our indicative discussions so far with the applicant are on the basis that there's one vehicular access off Conifer Road, which is where you obviously access the previous school, but we have had discussions about creating a pedestrian cycle access further down to David Scott Avenue. So we've had those discussions, but that wouldn't be a vehicular access, that would be a pedestrian access.
Okay, Councillor Smale.
Thank you.
Right, thanks. Any other questions? Right, can we just note that one and it'll go through the due again, through the due process and come up in front of the committee as a planning application. Okay, that then takes us on to 5.7, which is on page 79 to 96, which is the section 42 application.
Thank you, Chair. This is a section 42 application to remove a planning condition, condition 6, imposed on a grant of planning permission in principle, approved on appeal in February 2018 for residential development on land north of Dalhousie Dairy, Bonnyrigg. The permission is subject to a planning obligation securing developer contributions and conditions. A Section 42 application is in itself a planning application, a particular kind of planning application for development without complying with a condition previously imposed on an earlier grant of planning permission. A grant of planning permission under Section 42 results in an entirely new planning permission, which will supersede the original permission if implemented. In this case, it would be a planning permission in principle. Condition 6 requires the prior approval of details regarding the road and pedestrian crossing over the Pittendreek Burn, which is an integral part of the residential development connecting the southern and northern parts of the site. The details of the crossing have been approved by way of a separate planning application, which duplicates the requirement of Condition 6 of the original planning permission. The application regarding the crossing was submitted whilst the original application for residential development was being considered by the Scottish ministers. The removal of Condition 6 does not undermine a separate condition on the original permission, which limits the use of Baird's Way, Harmony Crescent and Gladstone Gate to construction vehicles only associated with the crossing works and the provision of structural landscaping. As the Section 42 application will be effectively a new planning permission for the site, a new legal agreement will be required, ensuring those commitments already agreed and secured by the original grant of planning permission are protected. No consultations were required and no representations have been received. The recommendation is to grant planning permission subject to securing developer contributions and conditions.
Thanks again, Peter. Open up to members of the committee. Councillor Mulligan.
Peter, I just want to be 100% clear in layman's terms. I'm very much aware now that this is, I would presume, recorded, that this will still mean that the main entrance and exit for this new site will be via the same route whilst we're suspending the condition on this just now, that the burn will still be the main crossing in and out of this site, and that construction traffic will only be that needed to landscape and to bring in this crossing that will go through the rest of the estate. Is that what you're telling us?
Yes, exactly right, Chair.
Okay. I'm clear here that this was a deemed refusal granted by the ministers and we didn't get a chance to speak on this when it came in front of us. One of the other concerns I have here is that the developer contributions from this site are heading solely to major projects that this council has, the A7 urbanisation programme, areas education and the rail network. It's became very apparent that the community or sports facilities and leisure facilities in Bonnyrigg are under a massive strain with the mass building projects that are coming in. So I would suggest that some of that developer contribution should be heading towards either replacement or upgrading of the community facilities. Is there anything out of line with that? I'm clear it's not in the local development plan, but is there anything wrong with looking to re-evaluate where that money's gone? Because at the moment, the local community is looking at getting all these masses of houses and absolutely nothing at all in Bonnyrigg apart from a part building a school.
Chair, the original grant and planning permission was subject to developer contributions, and as Councillor Milligan says, it's towards the schooling, both primary and secondary, Borders Rail, A7 urbanisation and the maintenance of open space. So those sums in effect are set. I don't think there would be a problem speaking to the developer about whether, for example, money which was originally allocated to A7 urbanisation, whether that could be used for other uses if that's what the council wanted to do so. So that is an option. I can also double-check, Chair, because we are collecting for funds for the A7 urbanisation from a number of sites, so it may be a case, Chair, that sufficient funds have already been earmarked for that project so that other funds could be used elsewhere, Chair. So I'm happy to take that away.
Could you maybe perhaps then take it away and, depending on your whatever your findings are, circulate the three local members, copied to myself, just so that everybody's in tune with what's happening. Thanks. Councillor Hackett. Oh, sorry, Councillor Milligan's not finished.
Yeah, I think I'm happy with that because I've seen the urbanisation programme and for the estimated developer contribution for the sites in Bonnyrigg alone seem to massively oversubscribe to what is the A7 urbanisation and programme, and I'm also aware of the other issues that are going on around Sheriff Hall that could contribute towards that. And I'm just not looking for us going back to developers saying, well, we want even more money. It's just about that spread of money all going to only the council's projects, and I didn't see why the council should at a later stage, for example, fit the bill for the regeneration of sports facilities and that are run down, when it's quite clearly the additional development within the town that are actually affecting on that. So I'd expect to see that being part of the developer contributions.
Thank you, Chair. If we are looking into sort of where the contributions from the A7 are coming from, it'd be good to get that from across all the wards, because I know there's development, certainly in my ward, that's paying contributions towards that. So if there's been an oversubscription of funds, it wouldn't be just one particular ward that would have contributed to that overpayment. It would have been all of the different contributions from the developments across the county.
I think Peter, in his answer back, was saying he would look at the A7 urbanisation programme, see what developed contributions had been taken thus far, and review the council's position on whether the other bits that come from the other wards could go back into these wards. So the answer is yes. So if we come out on the different wards, Peter, that go along that. A7, then all you need to do is identify monies over and above what's been set aside and let the three local members know. And I'm assuming Midlothian East and Midlothian South and Bonnyrigg. Yeah. Okay? Thanks. The rest of us, tough. okay, right. Are we okay on the Section 42 application? Okay, right, thanks. Thanks for that. That then takes us on to another Section 42 application. Don't we just love them? 5.8, which is 97-110. Again, Peter.
Thank you, Chair. This is a Section 42 application to amend two planning conditions, conditions 2 and 3, imposed on a grant of planning permission approved in August 2009. For the extraction and processing of sand and siting of associated plant and site office at Upper Dalhousie Sand Quarry, Bonnyrigg. The permission is subject to a bond and conditions. his Section 42 application, as previously explained, is actually a new planning permission, and therefore it's appropriate to consider it as it were a planning application. Conditions 2 and 3 relate to the time periods in which the extraction of sand and the restoration of the site thereafter is undertaken. The site comprises two extraction areas, Area A and Area B. The application seeks to extend the restoration period of Area A from a deadline of 2017 to 2020 and to extend the extraction and restoration period of Area B from a deadline of 2024 to 2030. This is to allow the continued extraction of the resource, including the extraction of sand from below the water table in Area B. It is not uncommon to adjust the operational time periods of resource extraction sites in response to fluctuating demands for materials, the ability to extract more material than originally expected, and to ensure the best possible restoration program. The consequence of extended extraction periods in Area B and the delayed restoration of Area A and B is that the environmental impacts of the development will be extended over a longer period of time. However, the existing quarry has not generated any significant complaints and is being effectively managed. The restoration of the site to woodland and agricultural land uses can be secured by a bond and by planning conditions, as the Section 42 application will effectively be a new planning permission for the site. A new bond will be required to ensure the restoration of the site. The consultation responses are set out in Section 5 of the report. There were no representations. The recommendation is to grant planned permission subject to the developer demonstrating that they have sufficient bond provision or insurance in place to ensure that in the event that the operator is not able to restore the site, financial provision is made to enable the site to be restored in accordance with the approved restoration plan and conditions.
Thanks very much, Peter. I'll open it up to members for any questions, comments. Councillor Hackett.
Thank you, Chair. Just on that latter point about the insurance and able to clean up the site, how do we make sure, or how do we place that? Is it the Council's responsibility? Is it the Planning Department's? And how do we make sure that's done on an ongoing basis? Because we're talking about quite a long period of time here.
Yeah, there's two things here, Chair. The first is in terms of, yes, as the Planning Authority, we have responsibilities to monitor and enforce planning permissions, and that includes mineral extraction permissions. They're often more complicated, often because of the scale of development and the time periods involved, but the planning conditions give us that leverage to take that action. Where there has been some historical problems in the past with the resource extraction sites, and I'm talking in general terms across the UK, not just in Midlothian, that sometimes once you open up sites and they start to get underway, if a company falls into financial problems, there's sometimes not the resource to then restore or address the problem. So what you do is ensure there is some sort of financial security, and traditionally that's done by way of a financial bond. It's almost like an insurance policy, so that even if the worst case scenario happens with the company, that someone else can step in with the financial resource to restore the site. The approach would be that the landowner, which is the Crown Estates, and the applicant would have a bond in place, but it would be for the Planning Authority, obviously in liaison with our colleagues in the Legal Department, to ensure that that bond is correct and robust.
Sorry, Chair, it's just, if you wouldn't mind, how do we place that? Is it an annual report? Do we go out and do an inspection? Do you ask for an updated insurance evaluation? How does that sort of work in practice?
Yeah, Chair, you would expect a sort of annual report from the applicants letting you know the progress of the site and how far they've got with certain activities. What you generally find is that the size of the site is such that you have almost like a rolling program of extraction, and then the restoration follows on behind. So it's not a case that you open up the whole site at once, so you've got basically a big hole in the ground. You effectively rotate the operations, and then sometimes you use material from one part of the site to backfill the others. But yeah, we proactively monitor them. They send us reports, so we do keep in check. They are often very sensitive developments, so they're ones that we do keep an eye on.
Archaeology officer appears to have no comments, which surprises me because this is close to Dalhousie Chester's, which I think is a Roman site. Has the archaeology officer actively considered this, or you simply haven't had a response?
Yeah, you tend to find, Chair, is that in terms of the consultation process, officers will look at it, but if they've got no comment, and we take that as they're happy with it, then they just simply don't provide us with any objections or any comment. In terms of the archaeology, we consult them on our what we call our weekly list, so they know which applications are coming in, and then we obviously draw their attention to significant applications, ones of this particular size, for example. But in terms of the environmental assessment that was submitted with the application, the applicants demonstrated that they could mitigate any potential environmental impacts, so we were happy with the proposed development. It is just worth bearing in mind it's also, A, it's an existing site, and B, it's identified in the Midlothian local plan as a what we call an area search, where you would expect a resource extraction from.
Yeah, I'm just seeing the bond, Peter. Is it normal for the bond to be between the operator and the landowner? And are you comfortable with the language we're using in there, that bond will be there to ensure sufficient funding in place to restore any land? I'm just wondering, should the landowner be left with that bond because the company go into administration or something? Could he just decide not to bother redoing the land in that? I just normally I would have thought the bond would have been between us and the developer.
So, Chair, sometimes the bond's between the landowner, the applicant and the council, in this case, because the landowner is the Crown Estates, by advice from my legal colleagues, is that they're satisfied that's not required for the council to be a signatory to that.
Is there any further questions on this? Quite happy to let it go ahead. Good. Well, still staying at the quarry site. The next application is 5.9, on pages 111 to 126. Peter.
Thank you, Chair. This is an application for the extraction and processing of sand on land to the south-southwest of the existing Dalhousie Sand Quarry, Bonnerig. The application effectively seeks to extend the existing quarry by creating an additional 11-hectare extraction area. The proposal includes using the existing access, site office, car park, plant and machinery. The proposed phasing of the proposal is that the extraction is to commence in 2026 and continue until 2035. The rolling restoration programme will start in 2029 and be completed in 2036. The majority of the site will be returned to agricultural land. The extraction area is identified in the Midlothian Local Development Plan as an area of search. And as such, there is a presumption in favour of the development subject to the mitigation of the environmental impacts of the development. The scale of the operations will be comparable to the existing quarry. The consultation responses are set out in Section 5, and there have been no representations made. Again, Chair, the recommendation is to grant plan and permission subject to the developer demonstrating that they have sufficient bond provision or insurance in place to ensure that in the event that the operator is not able to restore the site, financial provision is made to enable the site to be restored in accordance with the approved restoration plan and conditions.
Again, open it up for questions, comments. I think very similar to the last one, in a way. Yep. Is that okay? Right, okay, thanks very much. We now take the meeting into private session. So, could I ask any members of the public to